So why did I let her do Mountain Dew? Moonshine with me, corn squeezing too. Down in Appaloosa.
Well, that's really weird. My music just totally went off. This is Sound Health on BBS Radio, and I'm your host, Sherry Edwards. I think my computer just crashed, but I do thank you for joining us. On this show, we attempt to bring you ideas and information in support of self-health. We got that idea about self-health from our work here at the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology, because we do research related to sound and frequencies and how entraining the brain to use infrasound can help the body support its own optimal form and function. And we absolutely love all the attention that we're getting, and we want to accommodate all of you that want to be seen here as clients. But as we talk about what we do, we've created a monster. We don't have enough practitioners to accommodate everyone. We have some friends who heard about this, and they donated some scholarship funds to help people be able to take our professional courses. So if you're interested in that, write to us at radio@vocalprofileing.com or call us during regular office hours. That's 9 to 5 Eastern, Monday to Friday, and talk to Heather or Nikki or myself about the scholarships. And that number is 740-698-9119. Or if you would rather, just soundhealth@soundhealth.org. Our special guest today is Howard Nemiroff. He's developed a unique method of helping us rehabilitate traumatized muscles and to enhance athletic performance, and he's promised to answer questions from the audience. Welcome to the show, Mr. Nemiroff, or should I call you Howard? You certainly can call me Sherry.
Well, Howard is fine. Thank you for having me on, Sherry.
You are welcome, and thank you for taking time out of your schedule to be with us. You have originated a pioneering method. What made you decide to do that, and could you tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. That story starts about 20 years ago when I was in a massage school in California. They had a program that contained two of the basic principles that are in my work, and unfortunately, they were not able to explain to me the science behind why these changes were happening in the musculoskeletal structure during the treatment. So I embarked upon my own journey of research and development, looking at existing research from universities in motor control theory and working with physical therapists and other manual therapists to try and understand what was happening. And from that, I distilled the basic principles, which I refined over the next 10 years or so, at which point I began to teach a little bit to help other practitioners improve their delivery of service to their clients. So that's kind of it in a nutshell.
Well, how is this different from what's already available, say, as physical therapy?
In a way, it's not, well, it is different. In a way, what it is it adds the missing link that completes the rehabilitation process and enables the client to have longer-lasting results. What's not being addressed in existing forms of manual therapy like physical therapy or clinical massage therapy or even chiropractic is the complete understanding of how the brain, the part of the brain called the motor control center, decides how to move the body. And it does that by making choices as to which muscles to activate and in what sequence to activate them. So by understanding those principles and integrating them into their manual therapy practice, the practitioner will be able to enhance what they're doing with their client. so in a way, it's only an enhancement to what people are doing. I consider it more something that is complementary to and dependent upon good manual therapy skills, as opposed to being a replacement. I just want to add something to the toolbox so the practitioner can do a better job.
So you're teaching this to practitioners, not necessarily to somebody to do their own rehab.
Yeah, this is a practitioner-based process. So it could be a Pilates trainer, a physical therapist, massage therapist, a chiropractor. I've even had a medical doctor as a student.
Can you just sort of recap, if I was to make an appointment with you, how would that happen?
Well, you would usually, of course, you call up and say, so-and-so referred me, or I saw your website. And at that point, I would do a little bit of an intake over the phone to try and determine if what I do is indeed what would be the next best step, because I'm always trying to advocate for the client so that they can get from here to there as quickly as possible. They're, of course, being healed and not needing any more treatment. So we do a little intake. I would ask you a little bit about your injury history, and you would tell me what hurts and, you know, where it hurts and what movements make it hurt. And then I get a little bit of picture about what's going on, and then we can go from there. I can start kind of visualizing a treatment process based on all the other people I've treated in the past that sounds similar. So then you'd come in for the first treatment.
Do they always come in pain?
Most people do. Most people have their first visit is because they are in pain. They haven't been improving. They've often seen a number of other types of practitioners, and somebody refers them in.
So you try to get to the root cause of what's causing the pain, not just treating the pain?
That's correct. Sometimes people come in and say, well, you know, my upper back or my shoulder hurts, but I find that what's really going on is in their core or in their hip. So I try to find the cause of the problem. And in that, along that line, I also try to find out if the cause of the problem is something that is within my scope of practice or not, and I will be just as happy to refer them to somebody if I think another type of treatment is more appropriate as their next step.
Do you do some kind of physical exam, or you move their parts around, or you watch them walk, or when they get there, what do you do with them?
Well, I will observe their posture. I will observe them walking, sitting, and just generally their movements as they tell me what's going on. I will then do a little bit of manual assessment. It could include functional muscle testing, passive range of motion tests, where I very gently and slowly take a joint through what would normally be its natural range, see if there's restriction, see if the client tells me that it hurts to do that. There's a lot of feedback mechanisms that will help me begin to develop a treatment plan.
You've been doing this so long. Is everybody's body different, or this one's like that one because it didn't do this?
Every body is different, and every injury is unique. If 10 people came in and they all said, my hip hurts, I would still have to create 10 unique treatment plans because their injury pattern and their compensation patterns will be unique to their experience.
Could you talk a little bit about muscle memory?
Well, that's an interesting term. I don't call it muscle memory. I call it motor memory. The motor control researchers talk about motor memory. That is the part of the brain called the motor control center, and it has, I guess you could say, it's kind of like a hard drive where we store programs, just like our computer. So in there is a memory of the activation sequences of various activities that we go through. For instance, say bike riding. As we learn to ride a bike, the motor control center eventually says, okay, this feels pretty good. I'm balanced. I'm moving along at a good rate of speed. I feel a comfort and ease in how I'm doing this. So essentially, it compiles that sequence of movements into a motor program and stores it in motor memory. And that's where the memory exists for any given movement.
So it's like training an athlete to do the movement correctly, only you're starting from a place of trauma.
Yeah, well, I do work with athletes too, but usually they do come in when they're injured. And what we're trying to do is restore proper motor function so that they will leave remembering how to move naturally and efficiently. So when they train, they will get more benefit from their training, and they will be able to go faster and harder with less effort, because the perfect motor programming, of course, creates efficiency.
I want to ask you about a word that I have a hard time pronouncing. Proprioceptive?
Proprioception is the feedback that the brain gets from the sensory inputs in the body. Mostly I deal with three of those sensory inputs. There is a structure in the belly of the muscle called the spindle cell, and that gives back to the brain. It lets the brain see, well, how contracted is that muscle right now? And then there's the Golgi tendon apparatus, where the muscle attaches to the skeletal structure. That gives information to the brain on the amount of force that a certain effort is producing in the structure. And then there are sense receptors in the joints, which help the brain understand how, you know, where is that limb moving through space and how fast is it doing that. So that feedback is very important as we go through motor learning, which is the process of deciding, of the brain deciding which muscles to engage to perform a movement and in what sequence to engage them. Does that answer your question?
It does, but I'm asking for a very ulterior motive. I had a stroke last August, and it just brings to the surface how awesome the brain is. I could feel where my leg was, but I could look at my leg and it wasn't there. It was someplace else. It was like over to the side or something. And even trying to walk down steps, I would think my heel was flat, and I'd look down and my heel would be flat against a riser with my toe on the step. It is an incredibly odd sensation. It got to be funny to a point, you know, except when I fell down the steps a couple of times.
Yeah.
But is that something that you can retrain? Because they didn't do any therapy with me whatsoever.
Okay, well, in that case, of course, I would be wanting to know if the neurologist has made an assessment of your physical neurological system, and are those wires, so to speak, still completely, you know, 100% together, and are they still connected into the main computer system, so to speak, of the brain? If that's true, then yes, most people lose motor function because of some sort of trauma. Now, the trauma could come as a stroke, or it could be an auto accident. It could be repetitive stress injury, like computer people working at the keyboard all the time. But something causes the musculoskeletal structure to stop functioning in the way it was designed to function. If all the physical parts are there, then I can say, yeah, I could take a look and see what's going on.
Well, it's like the signal went to the wrong spot. I didn't understand about phantom limb pain and that kind of thing until that happened to me. That
right.
was just, it was totally odd for my brain to send a signal to my index finger and have my second finger do something when I was trying to type. It was like it got mixed up signals. So is that something that you guys train?
Well, like I said, I would have to take a look, and within the first treatment I could tell you whether I think there is a neurological pathology of some sort that you know, in which case you need to see a doctor, or if it's just simply trauma-induced loss of motor function.
Well, they didn't
if it's trauma-induced loss of motor function, then I can treat it.
They didn't send me to a neurologist. I was not a good patient. Where are you located?
Well, I have an office in Bastrop, Texas, which is about 30 miles east of Austin. I also see people in Austin, Texas. And then I have a practice out in the San Francisco Bay Area in California.
Do you have people trained all over to do this?
Not yet. That's what I'm working on next. I have some students in the San Francisco area who are trained in. And that's about it right now.
Do you have to have some kind of special degree or something to take this, or just have a clinical practice up and running? Could you be a massage therapist and take it?
Yeah, you could be a massage therapist who has an interest and a specialty in clinical work, in rehabilitation and or sports performance. So, yeah, somebody would need to have an established practice because simply because of the fact that to really attain any level of expertise with this work, you have to apply it and practice it. So if you're not practicing it in your practice, then...
Yeah. Do you have a special program to prevent sports injuries as well as to cure them?
Well, that gets into an area where I have to start working with somebody else, and it just so happens in my case, my wife is a functional strength trainer and a Pilates trainer. So there's a couple things that are required for injury resistance. One is my area of expertise, which is to restore natural and proper motor function so that you're moving in a more coordinated manner. A lot of times people re-injure because they may have had some treatment to relieve some of the symptoms, but they still haven't resolved the compensation patterns, and these compensation patterns leave them vulnerable to another injury. The other ingredient is the training effect. You have to strengthen yourself to make your structure more injury resistant.
Well, is what you do exercise or rehab or both, or...
Well, I think people need to have a regular exercise program, and actually, when people come in to see me, I often want them to be more active, not less active. As far as what kind of exercise program they prefer, I'm kind of non-denominational. Some people really like certain forms of yoga. Some people like to play soccer. What I want to see is that people are active and taking care of themselves.
Okay, I'm going to give the call-in numbers if you have a question for Howard and the kinds of things that he does. The toll-free number in the U.S. is 877-876-5227, and in Canada, 888-815-9756. The direct number, in case you can't get through on either of those, is 530-876-3222. And, of course, you can always write to us, radio@vocalprofiling.com. I've got the computer back up here, and we'll get the email and read your question. A lot of our people like to do that because they listen through their phone line, so they're sending an email here. What kind of injuries do you work with, Howard? Just any and everything dealing with muscles?
Yeah, anything dealing with a musculoskeletal injury, I've dealt with all sorts of sports injuries. I've worked with people who have neck injuries from car accidents, low back injuries of various sorts, ankle sprains. I've developed treatment protocols to help people who have bunions in their big toes, and I work with people who have carpal tunnel from repetitive stress of working in the high-tech industry, and everything in between. I've got treatments for people who have persistent jaw tension, and the dentist told them they have TMJ problems. I've recently developed protocols for helping women postpartum to restore function to their pelvic floors in their lower core area. So because the work's principle-based, it can be applied to any type of injury.
Sounds like you need to write a book so that we can do this, because you don't have, you, I don't know that you could see 1,000 people, you know, and everybody needs this.
I do have a book. The book is for my students, and that, actually I have 2 books now, and I'm working on my 3rd book, which will be for integrating the Nemirov method into the Pilates rehabilitation environment. Thing is, I haven't given any attention to writing a kind of a book for general public consumption, because this is a professional training program to help people help their clients.
Do you have a website that they could read about this?
Yeah, it's Nemirov-method.com.
Would you spell that for people?
Yeah. It's Nemirov is N as in Norman, E-M as in Mary, E-R-O-V. So that's 7 letters, N-E-M-E-R-O-V, and then a dash, and then method.
Okay, the dash is that middle dash, not the bottom one, right?
Correct. It's a short dash.
And just .com?
.com, right.
Okay. I have a question from an audience.
Okay.
You may have covered this. How does your method enhance athletic performance?
The training effect in athletic training, of course, is vital, because without strengthening your body, you can't perform, and without performing sport-specific training, you can't perform your sport. However, I've also found that training at certain levels to perform also produces stresses on the structure, which gradually cause an erosion of refined motor coordination. So what athletes usually need, and I really hope to see them before they get injured, is when they start to feel like, you know, I'm just not quite getting the results that I was. I'm starting to feel a little, you know, like my body isn't quite responding. That's an indicator that you're slipping into some compensation. A lot of times, for instance, when I was racing triathlons, by the end of the race, some of my muscles were completely fatigued, but I was not going to stop until I hit the finish line. So I would recruit other muscles to help me get there. If you do that enough, you start compensating. So if you start seeing that you have areas where muscle is persistently tight, that muscle is being over-recruited to compensate for something else, you're becoming less efficient, and that's where my work can really benefit you.
Do you ever suggest that people take a look at their nutrition?
Yes, I do, though I'm not a registered nutritionist, so if I believe there is a concern there, I will try to talk to them in general and see if I can't help them find a qualified professional to help them with that.
I'm trying to read some of these long emails as it comes in, and this one I never would have expected. Can you work with a person to retrain internal muscles, like incontinence, loss of bowel integrity?
Well, some of those muscles, if you're talking about the peristaltic function, no. Those muscles are more hardwired into a more reflex system. If you have issues like that, well, then there could also be other types of pathologies. There could be digestive disorders, you know, other issues up to and including a cancer or something like that. What I have found, particularly working with women postpartum, is that the natural delivery process it severely strains the pelvic floor. And not everybody recovers real easily or very quickly. So what I found a lot of times is even years later that about half the women still have weakness in their pelvic floor function. In that case, that can lead to certain types of incontinent problems. And then it can help. If we can get the pelvic floor firing again, then you can do some simple exercises to start strengthening the various muscles in your pelvic floor and get some benefit.
And you have exercises for that? Or do you just shift them over to your wife and have them do Pilates kinds of things?
I may do either. Personally, I think any muscle group doesn't exist in isolation, so I think the Pilates would be very beneficial. I can give them, it's a modification of the Kegel technique to kind of help them get started. But I know recently I saw somebody who had some more severe pelvic floor issues and, you know, it didn't seem to me like she was taking care of her nutrition or her basic physical health. So I started making some recommendations as to what she needed to do next, which did not include me. So it just depends.
You know, probably our people know what Pilates are, but just can you give a short explanation for them in case we've got some listeners that don't know?
Well, I'm not a Pilates professional, but I'll give you my interpretation of it from my perspective, and that's that it gives us the strength and it helps us devise strategies to cope with gravity. We have to deal with gravity all day long. The exercises help us do that in a far more integrated way so that our various muscles in our body aren't overstrained, and I find it to be an excellent conditioning program for that reason and for many others. I know a lot of athletes now are starting to incorporate Pilates for the cross-training effect because most sports kind of focus on certain muscle groups or certain movement patterns.
And you can see the little training kits, the beginner ones at like Borders and Amazon and kinds of things. There's some strange emails coming in. This lady says, I have osteoporosis and a prolapsed uterus, and it looks like the word is rectocele, and a rectocele. How would you deal with that?
I'm not sure I understand what that last condition was.
Rectocele. Let me look it up on the internet.
Okay, well, prolapsed uterus. I'll look at that. Now, what I find is a lot of times is people are not engaging their core functions very well. There's four layers of muscles in the abdominal wall, for example. Most people only use the most superficial layer, the one that's kind of in the front, the rectus abdominis. That's the muscle that people are all worked up over when they do crunches because they want to get that six-pack. That is a fairly useless set of exercises, and it doesn't address the underlying need to use the entire abdominal wall complex to stabilize the torso and our posture, so it actually improves our spinal posture, and it also helps us to maintain integrity of our internal organs and where they hang in space. Now, of course, there's other issues which would get into the visceral fascia. That's the connective tissue that anchors the organs in the places where they are supposed to be, and that gets out of my area of expertise and into an area of, a good osteopath who's trained in classical osteopathy may be able to address those issues in doing visceral manipulation.
Mm-hmm. I looked this up. I'm just reading some of the other emails and trying to listen to you. It's fascinating. What people are interested in. A rectocele is a tear between the rectum and the vagina. Rectal tissue bulges through this tear into the vagina as a hernia. There are two main causes, childbirth and a hysterectomy.
Okay, well, that is something where the physical structure is compromised. So it sounds like that person needs to go check with an orthopedist who specializes in repairing those kind of herniations.
So you would recommend surgery then with this, or send them to a specialist?
Yeah, then it's up to the medical doctor to decide. Now, some medical doctors say, well, you know, it's not that bad. Let's try a course of physical therapy. And if that's true, and they may say, well, let's try some physical therapy and some Pilates. And if that's true, then I'd be happy to help. But when people start talking about damaged tissue, then I'm, of course, concerned about other types of issues which I cannot address.
Okay, this one you may not be able to address either. I have a daughter that was born with brainstem injury, so she doesn't have any motor memory to go on. She's 4 now. Can something be done for her?
Yeah, this is not a miracle cure. Sorry, I'm very sorry about your daughter. The wiring of the nervous system and the structures and levers of the musculoskeletal system need to be there in order for the brain to be able to learn how to operate them. If either the neurological wiring is missing or else the physical structures are missing, then the motor learning is the ability to perform motor learning is reduced.
Is there any way that these parents could do the movement for her and sort of train her muscles to do it?
That's out of my area of expertise.
Okay. Thank you, though, for the email. Another email. Do you work with fibromyalgia?
Well, that's an interesting topic. Sometimes there's a gray area. Sometimes it seems like that might be a term that people get, and sometimes they actually have a pathology. There's one area of fibromyalgia that seems to be associated with fibromyalgia, and that's that I find that some of the people who have been diagnosed with it actually have, I guess, what you could call an inflammatory personality. They're very angry. They seem to be very controlling and want to have it done a certain way, and if it doesn't happen that way, they get more angry, and I think anger being kind of a according to Chinese medicine, is kind of more of a heat element, which can cause more inflammation. So, that's just my opinion and my experience. There are other people I've found who are really doing pretty well, except they have kind of this persistent upper back or upper thoracic pain pattern that gets diagnosed as fibromyalgia, and I often do find that there is a lot of compensation. Especially there's a muscle in the front top of the rib cage, the pectoralis minor, that can go into serious spasm, and it's very sore to touch, and it can be recruited to compensate for anything from how you move your shoulder and even your hand. It can even affect your gait. In other words, when you walk, how efficiently do you move all four of your limbs together when you walk? There are other areas in the upper back, between the shoulder blade and the spine, that can get very tense, and they can get very sore to touch. And again, they can be involved in a lot of types of compensation, similar to the muscle in the front.
A couple of the studies that we did done here on fibromyalgia showed that a lot of times people with really high iron have fibromyalgia, or if they have an inability to get oxygen to the cells so that they can get rid of lactic acid. And pyruvate has a lot to do with it.
Yeah. Well, again, what I do is complementary to what other people do. I look at the body as it's a system of systems, and at best, I can only know a small piece in the large puzzle. So if people have nutritional or dietary issues which are causing other symptoms, then of course they need to get to that type of professional and address those issues so that we can affect a complete resolution. I find the rehabilitation usually does require a team effort.
How much of the muscle injury and motor memory do you think has to do with intention and personality, one for the injury and two for the cure?
The intention of the person?
Yes.
To recover?
Well, also to get injured or not get injured. How much is intention when somebody gets injured?
Well, some of that sounds like psychological complex that would predate the injury. And, of course, again, if they have that, then they need to address that first. Obviously, if somebody has an intention to get well, and this is a funny thing, I find that the people that are willing to do whatever it takes and are really sincere in their effort get well a lot faster. In other words, they come in and they may be willing to go through a very lengthy treatment process if it's going to help them get well, but usually they only need, you know, 2, 3, 4 treatments from me at most.
I think it's an interesting question, though, about intention to actually cause maybe a failure to, or you don't want to succeed, so you might cause a muscle problem.
Well, actually, I've been contemplating that a lot, and of course, applying it to my personal experience first and foremost, and that's the thought that's been in my mind lately is snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. I think a lot of us do engage in self-defeating processes, maybe for a lot of reasons, which are definitely outside my very area of expertise, so I don't really want to go into much detail there. But that's for each person to have to grab a hold of and wrestle and resolve. I think... you know, it's sad to see a lot of people are aspiring to mediocrity when what they're really doing is enslaving themselves.
How would you think they were enslaving themselves?
Well, I think I find that the people often don't change until they experience sufficient pain or have sufficient love. And, of course, in my opinion, love is better. And, but, you know, sometimes pain will get you to that point of love. Sometimes people don't love themselves enough. I don't know. I've seen a lot of different types of situations and, patterns and conditions in my 20-plus years of practice. I think that by not addressing any issue, whether, say, for example, cigarette smoking, that is a way to enslave one's health.
Yeah.
It's generally not good for people. But it could be something subtle. It could be a belief carried forth from childhood where somebody just thinks that, you know, I don't know, I'm just funny looking or, you know, people don't like me and... you know, other people are raging successes in life, and they're socially adept, and they get places and do things, and I don't. And it can be nothing more than, you know, an imagery and a mythology that's perpetuated by somebody's continuing to talk to themselves in that manner and not addressing, oh, why don't you resolve it?
Have you had people come in that just you thought didn't want to get well?
Yeah, I did.
How do you deal with that?
I try to disappear very quietly and very cordially and very ethically. I don't want
sad.
To work.
We have a question from Arnie. Thank you for signing your email. Would you recommend someone with a hernia not exercise?
That's a medical question.
Okay. We'll go on to a metaphysical one, then. What do you think of cranial sacral work?
I've taken a little bit of cranial sacral training. And again, what I do is synergistic to cranial sacral. I've had people get that. And sometimes, of course, that deals with some more neurological, you know, some of the more basic neurological function. And by getting cranial sacral work or osteopathy, people can actually kind of get their nervous system cleaned up so that the motor center is more efficient in its relearning process. So that can be very very synergistic and very beneficial.
It's awesomely meditative, too. I just kind of go to other worlds. I love cranial sacral work. I mean, I have it. I love having it done. I don't know how to do it. Boy, we've got probably 10 more questions here, and we only have about 12 minutes. What would you do for a blown meniscus, asks Liz.
A blown meniscus. Okay. I worked, of course, with a lot of people with knee injuries. First of all, I need to know what your doctor has to say about it, and maybe look at the MRI summary. And then we have to do a functional assessment to see how much range of motion you have available. And then we can see if you have some compensation patterns which may be inhibiting your recovery. After that, of course, if the joint is compromised because you have a meniscus tear or you have some missing meniscus tissue, then, of course, we need to really work under the auspices of the orthopedist.
Is there nutrients or exercises or something that they can do before this? Isn't that a football injury, sort of a common football injury?
I mean for those kind of joint injuries?
Mm-hmm. Knee injuries like that?
Yeah. You know, again, that's out of my area of expertise. I have read a little peripheral reports on various research, including types of therapies to replace or repair the meniscus. Of course, people probably are more motivated when they have that problem, so there's some information on the internet that may be useful, so I guess, you know, start searching. That's about all I know about that.
I think you've answered this question, but if you want to add something to it, that would be great. How does what you do fit with surgery?
Well, again, we're talking about after the surgery, and after the surgery, at some point, the doctor will clear the person for physical therapy. At that point, we can take a look. Often, I will work with the physical therapist, so I'll do a treatment. They'll do a treatment. For instance, talking about knees, I'm working in California. I'm working with an athlete who just had some knee surgery and is in physical therapy, so we both treat her and communicate from time to time. Trauma during the injury that led to the need for the surgery can cause loss of motor function, and surgeries can cause loss of motor function because they're traumatic too. So in order to, again, to completely heal and recover, it's good to make sure that motor function is completely restored so that you don't re-injure yourself.
Here's kind of a strange small one, then we've got 3-4 big ones. I've heard that back stress and injury really comes from poor abdominal strength. Is this true or just an old wives' tale?
No, it's very much true. I think most low back injuries could be prevented if people maintained good core strength. Usually what happens is, and if people don't seem to understand this, people think that they use their back muscles to hold themselves erect in gravity, and that's not true. The back muscles, which are the ones that usually get injured, work together with the abdominal wall, and it's really the deeper layers of the abdominal wall that lift the rib cage up away from the pelvis and stabilizes our torso in space. And of course, in doing that properly, those deeper abdominal muscles will lengthen the lumbar spine. So you actually have a longer spine, which means there's more room for your discs. So, yes, it's very important.
Do you do anything with degenerative discs?
Yes, I do have people with degenerative discs. The best I can say is to arrest the process. In that case, they definitely need to make sure that they have a good exercise program in conjunction with therapy. Remember, I look at what I do as I'm very much a specialist. There is a beginning and a very definite end point in motor reprogramming. At that point, and it happens, it comes pretty fast, sometimes faster than people would like to believe, but I want to see them get to that end point quickly, and then they need to exercise.
Okay, this is another hernia question from the audience. Would you talk about what a hernia is and how it can be repaired without surgery?
That is a medical question. I'm going to pass.
Okay. Do you do anything with genetic disorders? Lou Gehrig's MS, muscular dystrophy, is the three they listed.
Yeah, I've worked a little bit with people with MS. Had a certain amount of success in helping arrest the process. I know there are other therapies out there that are addressing that, and that's about all I know.
Along with that, I mean, there's two questions in this one email. Do you work with myotonia?
I'm not familiar with that term either.
Very stiff muscles that come with MS and loss of range of motion, just the muscles just tighten up.
Okay. See, we're talking about diagnoses. Now, there could be a number of reasons why muscles tighten up. If muscles tighten up because there's an underlying pathology, then, of course, that's a medical issue. Sometimes people have tight muscles because those muscles have been overworked and over-recruited for a long period of time because they're being heavily recruited to compensate for other muscles. If we can address that and there are no other underlying issues, then, yeah, we can usually bring about some improvement in the condition.
In a couple of the studies that we've done here, we found that people with a lot of issues like myotonia lack serine. And we can't put our finger on why that works, but that just tends to be what comes up. It's an amino acid, if that's any help to you.
Right. Well, again, you know, it's important to remember that I certainly believe that in working in a team environment, so, you know, if there are other things that will help that person, that's very good.
So this works with almost every kind of practice that deals with the body's form.
Mm-hmm.
Another question. What have you been able to do with stroke injury?
Stroke injuries. Well, I think we did address that earlier. It depends on the level of the stroke. I work with people who had minor levels of stroke, but there was no neurological damage, and we were able to restore their function completely.
So is any of that on your website that they could look at the kinds of things you've been able to do?
Yeah, there are some links there for some general injuries like low back pain.
Do you want to give them your website address again?
Sure, it's nimirov-method.com, and Nimirov is spelled seven letters. It's spelled N as in Norman, E M as in Mary, E R O V as in Victor.
And we will also post that on the description of the show. If they wanted to get in touch with you, should they do that through the website? Do you have an email address that you want to provide or a phone number? Or?
Yeah, they can get a hold of me a couple different ways. they can email me at the email address is hn@nemirovmethod.com. They can call me. Best number to reach me, because I travel, I'll give you my mobile number, and that's 512-658-2318.
And should we publish that number?
Yeah, you can publish
it. In
that.
The description? Okay, yeah. I understand that you're going to be teaching a very special summer course for professionals. Can you talk a little bit about what that is like and how long it's going to be?
Yeah, this class actually is limited to people who have taken the Nimirov Method training, who are also Pilates practitioners, or are interested in learning more about the Pilates environment. It's requiring me to write my third book, and what I'll be doing is integrating the Nimirov Method into the Pilates environment, so we'll be using Pilates exercises to assess breakdown in motor coordination, take a quick break to perform some Nimrod method work to reintegrate motor function and return to the exercise. I think it's going to be very exciting in how quickly it will help the brain reintegrate new movement in order to recover even faster. And that's that will be happening at Center of Balance in Mountain View, California. It'll be a one-weekend class. The class that will be offered to the public for the Nimrod method with Pilates will be a longer class, though we're going to break it up into one-day workshop formats, but it takes about 24 hours of training to really get the full set of principles under your belt so you can start practicing.
And they can find information about that on your website?
Yeah, and if they have any other questions, they can get a hold of me.
Okay, we are out of time. Thank you, Howard, for joining us. It's been fascinating, and the audience obviously was interested in the kinds of things that you do. So we'll probably have you back on the show if you're willing to do that.
Oh, I'd love to be on again. And I sure appreciate you inviting me to be on your show.
It's great to have you here. And when you get this course together, you can come back and talk about how you're integrating this stuff.
Will do.
Okay. For our audience, please tune in to our Thursday show here on BBS Radio Station 2. We'll be doing vocal profiling live, and we're going to do vocal prints on the air. This week's topic is the sex factors. Remember, if you want to do something, you will. If you don't want to do it, any excuse will do. And we'll talk to you next Sunday.
On my back pocket, got a little Thursday. Talk to my balloons.